Well, hello again, everybody. It's getting ready for another episode of The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and longtime NHLer Russ Courtnell. This is our 15th show coming up. And on the show today, Russ has gone gluten-free. Okay, he's in a bit of a... Russ is in a bit of a dilemma. He had to give up beer. What are going to be his options? You got to listen for that. Russ, your very opinionated take on captains in the NHL. Okay, you got lots to say about that. Great story, Russ, about you retiring and what other players have to go through. A great story about your paychecks and your opinion on Antonio Brown, whether he should be allowed to play in the NFL. How do you like it, Russ? Are you ready for a big show?
I'm ready.
Okay. And what was your defining moment for you as a player? That and much, much, much more on The Suspendable. Stick around.
Are you in your smoking robe?
I'm in my...
That means, do you have clothes on?
I got it. We're recording, Russ. What do you mean? Am I in my smoking robe? Of course I'm in. Of course I'm in my smoking robe. Hey, welcome everybody to episode 15 of The Suspendables. I'm Jungle Jim Jerome, and Russ Courtnell is really the guy. Okay, Russ is really the guy.
Thank you.
We're getting... how are you, Rusty?
I'm good, bud.
We're getting a huge amount of listeners, and we appreciate that because we want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
Although we've said some shit that maybe.
Well, when you talked about the four large, very large bridesmaids, we know we lost.
Yeah, that's true.
We lost some listeners.
You remember that story?
Yeah.
How's the week, Rusty? What have you been doing? What sticks out? What, you know, bring us up to speed on this glorious lifestyle you lead.
I'm still up at Gosser in Idaho, and it's been a busy few days. Been a lot of fun. And watched the frickin' Vikings lose today to the Packers, which is the shits. And,
of course, that's your
daughter's boyfriend. Yep. Yeah, Eric Kendricks, number 54, played really well, but the old quarterback. I don't know, not a huge fan.
Oh, and, well, that'll be all right. It's early. Yeah, it's early.
Yeah. But that was a tough loss. And then afterwards, Dougie Waite and I went to the gym and rode the bike for 45 minutes and then, just hanging out.
Life's tough.
Yeah.
Is this the Peloton thing you're doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what is Peloton again? You told me this before, but I forget.
It's a stationary bike that has a TV screen and you just log into classes. So I got a little riding relationship going with the lovely and the talented Allie Love.
Oh, who does the ad? Is she the girl who does the ads?
You pick whatever class, right? So there's men and women teaching class, and I've narrowed it down to Allie Love.
Well, you get to pick.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you do, you can do all kinds of stuff, but I try to do 30 or 45 minutes, and it's been really paying off. You just start shredding the weight off. So
I've got to tell you a hilarious story about a friend of mine. Speaking of picking. You remind me, okay, this is a comedian guy I knew over the years and he used to show up at this club where I hosted the show in Edmonton and, great guy and ended up in this terrible situation where he had a young son who had a fatal disease and he incorporated this into his act, you know, and, it was a real deal and he came out on stage. This is how funny the guy was and how grounded he was. And he said, yeah, it's me. Yep. You've heard about my son. And he's got this terrible deal. And but the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Rush, you've heard of that. You've probably raised money for that. Yeah. You know, it's an organization that grants these kids who are fatally ill a wish, you know. And they are 100% successful on these wishes. They've been doing it for years. They've never been able to not fulfill a wish. And so he says, I got a call from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And they asked me, they said, listen, can you talk to your son? It's time for him to make his wish and figure out what it is so we can start working on it. And the guy says, you know what? I've already talked to him. I've already talked to him and I know what he wants. His wish is for him to watch his father have sex with Cindy Crawford. I mean, you can't write it. I mean, the guy was so cool.
Kid's dying and he's making fun.
Yeah. And he's making this wish. Anyway, I'll tell you what else happened, Russ, to me this week before we get into the show, I got so much stuff written down about
this.
The show.
This is all about you, isn't it, today?
No, it's no, don't say that. Come on, Jesus. I'm trying here. You know, so I'm on Twitter. Bang!
Do you got a dart going?
Not yet. I'm going to get one going right now.
I'm on Twitter. Light one up because you're getting. You know, you're too excited right now.
Okay. I was kind of excited. I'm on Twitter. Okay. I'm on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I get one of these. We're going to get you on Twitter. So yeah, I get one of these direct messages, these DMs. Uh-huh. I put a picture of myself up with Arnold Palmer because I caddied for him when I was 16 in an exhibition, 18 holes, and he turned 90 this week. So everyone's talking about Arnold. I said, I got to put this picture up, you know? And then I get a direct message from this girl saying, that's the hot gym I remember from back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Well, I go, do tell. I respond.
Yeah.
And this girl says, yeah, you and, I knew you back in the 80s and early 80s. And you and I spent some time together.
Oh, boy.
And I'm going, really?
Now you're really excited.
Yeah. Yeah. She said, yeah. In fact, we spent some real time together. Do you remember? Worst question ever, Russ. Worst question ever, because I said...
Yeah, I do. What's your name?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it was a blast from the past to this girl. In the end, she's like, I can't believe you don't remember me. You know, we got it on, Russ, really. Oh, it's the end of it.
Oh, my God. Narrowed it down to two people.
Yeah, I said, that can't be me. I never got a girl, you know? Back in the... I was a nerd.
Yeah.
Anyway... She said she was completely sad. I couldn't remember, but it was kind of hilarious. Anyway, what we got, Russ? I got so much stuff this week. I just watched the Solheim Cup. The girls lost. The American girls play Europe, just like the Ryder Cup, and they lost. They lost by a point.
Oh wow!
A bunch of hype. Russ. I mean, you live in the States, Russ, so there's always these events, you know, where America wants to take on the world, and. If you really want to take on the world, then take on the world. So I never, even the Ryder Cup where they just play against European guys and not anybody else, not from Australia or Asia. And I said, if you want to do this, let's bring in the girls from Asia. Let's bring in the whole world if you want to take them on. So I don't know. Everyone's ranting and raving about that they lost and they're all upset and everything. But doesn't do much for it. I don't know. Did you watch it? You know Danielle Kang, of course. She was
on it. Yeah, she's a member at Sherwood Country Club, an honorary member. So I see her quite a bit in the wintertime practicing. Very, very close with the Gretzky family, and the kids are tight. Real nice girl. Obviously, all those girls, all the athletes at that level, you know, they practice all the time.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know if I have, you know, anything to really add to it other than. You know, if you're going to play in a world championships, you're right. You should have the world there. But it's like U.S. against the world. That would be tough, don't you think?
Well, they can't even beat
the Europeans.
Yeah, but they love to do that, right?
Yeah.
The Americans are like, let's go, you know. Anyway, America lost. Go ahead.
I saw a chip and a putt, a sand shot when I was getting my coffee this morning at the coffee bar. So I saw three shots. And then I was trying to find the frickin' Vikings game. And they didn't. We didn't have the NFL package at the clubhouse because the club closes October 10th. So, I went over to Dougie Waite's house. He and I, and he was so gracious and nice. He's a Detroit Lions fan. And he let me watch, in his living room, let me watch the Vikings game. So he and I sat there and watched the game together. And the hardest thing for the two of us watching the game was, not cracking a beer or White Claw. That I'm drinking now, but he goes, I think this is the first football game I've watched and I haven't had a drink.
What's a White Claw? What is it?
White Claw is a Canadian company. Anthony Von Mendel's company out of Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's a hard seltzer and
like booze.
Yeah. It's 5% alcohol, 100 calories, and I'm gluten free now. So it's a good little drink. And so
wait a minute, Rusty. Wait a minute.
No, seriously. And you can look it up. It's outselling Budweiser.
Okay.
It's the fastest growing drink in all these kids are drinking this hard seltzers now and not beer.
I could just imagine you at the liquor store going in and saying, listen, I'm on a diet. Okay, well, this one's gluten-free, but there's no booze. Oh, yeah, that won't do.
But numb nuts. I'm not on a fucking diet. I can't eat gluten or drink gluten anymore because I'm allergic to it. Seriously.
Since when?
Since I got tested over a year ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe it. I didn't get tested for that, but it came back. The results of this test came back that I was highly allergic to gluten. And as I've gotten older, it's been harder and harder to drink a lot of beer. Like I'll have a couple beers and then I can't digest it. If I was eating bread or pasta, I constantly had acid reflux, but I thought it was from smoking cigars or drinking red wine or eating
That may be an obvious reason.
So in October, I got off gluten and I haven't had to have a Tums or any kind of thing I haven't had any acid problems. So yeah, I love beer. I just can't drink it anymore.
Well, we don't want you to get unhealthy.
You know? No. So I'm drinking, I'm drinking one right now as we speak. I'm drinking the black cherry. Yeah. Let me take a sip while you talk for the next five minutes.
Yeah.
Hog.
Yeah. What, Jesus, what's wrong with you today? What have I done? I've done nothing.
No. Keep talking. I'm drinking.
A lot of good response from the listeners. I get lots of posts from people talking about it. The big news, Russ, you played for the Leafs. And the big news is they sign Mitch Marner to a $10 million, six-year deal, I think, $10 million a year.
10.9 or something. But, you know, now they've got four players making $40 million a year, right?
Yes.
So that leaves them whatever for the cap. Like, they're in a tough spot. They got to win, man. I mean, they got to win because other players are going to be coming to the plate and they'll be kind of like Chicago where they kept having to trade all these really good players because they couldn't sign them. I mean, that's a tough deal, the cap. Man, it sucks. But these kids are making a lot of money. Good for them. But I just worry about they don't have enough money for the other players, you know?
Well, that's the issue with this cap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of a dry subject all the time, every year that comes up about, well, they got to do the cap. So it's this massive story in Canada because the Leafs are the team, you know, the national team. And I got to admit, like there's a million articles written on the guy taking us through how the negotiations went. Dubas is this young GM, right? From Toronto. And really in the end, Russ, it's like, okay, you signed a guy. And off you go, you know. But they better win, Russ.
Yeah,
they better win.
They're a hell of a hockey team. I mean, they've got really good players. I just worry that they, you know, can't sign other guys, and that part sucks.
What's the deal, Russ? When you're trying to sign guys on your team, obviously you've got star players that are obvious. If you only had to sign one position, Russ, with a guy. You know, everyone needs a big D and skaters and a goalie. When you're trying to run this team, when you're trying to set it up for the year, signing agents, unrestricted or restricted, whatever. Who do you want to get done first, Russ?
I think you get your best player done because then that sets the bar. I think that was the problem was with Marner. He's led the team in scoring, so he and his camp probably feel like he's the best player. Yep. And, you know, whether he is or he isn't, Austin Matthews is who they probably think is their best player. I don't, you know, I'm no, but you want to set, I remember when I played, they would always try to sign the best player on the team. And then everybody else was going to fall under that no matter what happened.
Right.
You know, we can't pay you more than Patrick Waugh or Montreal. We can't pay you more than, you know, Chelly or.
Right.
So. Ray Bourque in Boston, I know he upset a few of their players, like Cam Neely, because he never stuck it out and fought for more money, and then it hurt everybody on the team because they weren't going to pay Cam more than Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. I just think if you're managing your books, you want to get the best players locked up, and then everybody falls underneath them.
Well, a lot of players are loving this, right? Who otherwise wouldn't be making, you know, real big dough because of what you, like you say, this domino effect.
Yeah.
There's three or four, I read an article this morning, there's three or four guys who have scored way more goals than this guy has. the captain in Calgary is you played with his father.
Not the big Tkachuk.
Yeah, isn't his son the captain in Calgary?
No. Defenseman is. But Tkachuk's a young, really good player, but I don't know what he's obviously he's holding out because they can't agree on terms, but he's a heck of a player, a big, strong kid.
One of the things that comes out of this, Russ, and I do a little daily podcast in Ottawa.
You're Steve cheating Warren. On us.
I'm cheating. Well, we get to talk about our show.
Hopefully.
It's really good.
Hopefully you got more than 10 listeners.
Well, it's mostly an Ottawa-based show.
You got 50.
Steve Warren Project. But what came up on this thing, Russ, what comes out of this? And I said, I'm going to ask Russ about this because I don't understand, Russ, where these teams are picking multiple captains.
Yeah.
Okay. In the old days, it was, you know, who's your captain, how you pick them. Well, I want to talk to you about that. But
you know what it tells you? It tells you they don't have enough leaders on the team. They think they, you know, by adding more, we've got so many, we can't pick. Well, just pick three. Pick three like they always did. One captain, two assistants, maybe three assistants. But this alternating, like, I get to wear an A. It's like giving the kid the toy that doesn't deserve the toy because he's freaking whining. I mean, right. Fuck off. Right. Again, pick three, pick four, but don't alternate. Okay, when we're on the road, you two are the assistants and you're the captain. And then when we're at home and then halfway through the season, we'll alternate. I mean, you know who the leaders are in your team. Pick the three guys. And the other thing that pisses me off is when teams don't have a captain because they're waiting because the kid's young and, we want to give it to him, but we don't want to give it to him now because he's too young or freaking pick a captain. And if the kid grows in to be your best player, captain, then take it away from the other guy or trade him and freaking make the kid the captain. I mean, make up your freaking mind. It's such a joke.
Tell me this, Russ.
Tell you how I feel.
No. I love this. Why do you have to have a? Is there some rule, Russ, that you have to have a captain when you're playing games, or that you have to have three? And what difference does it make during the game? Who's captain and who isn't, and who's an assistant?
Well, I think it's the communication between the coach to the player to the referee. So the captains can go over and talk to the referees of a, you know, before you could contest a call or whatever, you know, now you can throw your little handkerchief or whatever they do. But But before you'd send your captain over to the ref. My coach wants an explanation. If you didn't have an A or C on, the ref would go pound sand. So So it was a communication thing. It's a ceremonial thing, and it just shows everybody, the team and the other team and the fans and the world, that this is the leader of our team, and this is who the players are going to follow onto the ice and off the ice. And they're a communicator, really, from the coach to the players. So
take us through the process, Russ, of picking a captain. I've always heard there's two ways.
So
he gets named by a coach, or the players do it. And have you been involved? Obviously, when you played, have been involved in the process. Take us through that.
So every team I played on except Montreal, the coaches picked the captains. So I played on six teams. So Montreal, it was a vote. Players voted. And Bob Gainey retired after my first year. So we had to pick a new captain. So Pat Burns he wanted Chris Chelios. So he was going around to all the English-speaking players. And sorry, Guy, if you're listening to this podcast, but this is true and you're hearing it for the first time, unless one of our buddies told you. So he wanted Chelly. He didn't want Carbo. So he went around. He goes, I want Chelly. I want Chelly. I want you guys. Come on, pick Chelly. So we have...
He's like lobbying the players.
He's lobbying the players. So we have a vote, and you just write down who it is, and you throw it in a hat, like just write it on a piece of paper, throw it in the hat. We're all sitting around before practice. They count the two assistant captains from the year before counted the vote. So it was Brian Skrulin and maybe Mike McPhee. I can't remember. I can't remember who our assistants were. Oh, because we lost Larry Robinson too. He was assistant captain. So maybe it was just call it Brian Skrulin. I don't know. Can't remember who it was.
Okay.
So they count, and it was a tie.
Now what?
So then we voted again, and they're like,
Chelly's in this tie.
Yeah, Chelly. So it's Chelly and Carbo. It's between Chelly and Carbo. That's it. Right. And I think it was like we had three ties in a row. and a couple guys picked other guys, like, but Chelly and Carbo kept tying. So it was like, right, you know, say 10 for Chelly, 10 for Carbo, and then two other picks. And then it would be 9 for Carbo, 9 for Chelly, and then four other picks. I mean, it was hilarious. And then finally, they just said, they go, well, we got to go talk to the coach. The coach walked in and they said, hey, we just can't break this tie. And he goes, Okay, Carbo, you're for the first 40 games, you're the captain on the road. And Chelly, you're the captain at home. And then you guys switch. And that's how we ended up with two captains because we couldn't break the tie.
Yeah, I agree. Just pick a guy, okay? Pick a guy, have one captain. If it doesn't work out, fine. We'll deal with that down the road.
And I think the players really should pick. Sorry, I keep cutting you off today, but I don't know why.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But I think the players should really pick, and maybe the coach picks. I don't know. Maybe the coach.
Yeah.
Maybe the coach gets to vote with the players because the coaches, you know, they should have a say too. But I don't know if they should have all the say. I don't know.
Yeah. So that, before I leave this topic,
okay,
what about off the ice? What about away from the game, Russ? What role does a captain play with the players away from the coach and away from practice and away from games?
Say that again.
So the captain of a team, there's a bunch of shit outside of playing games and practice and away from the coaches and stuff. What role would a captain normally take with stuff with the players outside of the arena?
Well, like, you know, when the shit's hitting the fan, the captain calls meetings, when the captain wants the team to have a party, when the captain thinks there's an issue with the player. I mean, he really should be handling everything internally, with the players and then leading by example. But the coach and captains usually meet now and they go over travel schedules and practices, and because now they have a lot more say than when I played. So they get the automatic days off and, you know, this and that. And so there's a lot of things that the captains have more responsibility today than they had, and a lot more say, I guess, than, you know, back in when I played in the 80s and 90s.
Antonio Brown just won't go away. Russ,
oh my God.
This story, I'm trying, you know, I
don't even know what he looks like, but frick, I sure know his name.
Yeah, and so he was originally in the news when he went to, where was he? Got traded and then he got kicked out.
Raiders?
Not bought. Raiders, yeah. So he was with the Raiders, caused a big stink about the helmet. We've talked about this before. Became a knob in how selfish he was, and we talked about that. You said get rid of the guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he left $30 million. So he goes to New England. Bunch of backstory there. Apparently that whole thing was designed that he wanted to get out of there so he could go to New England. And he ends up on his way there. Is Belichick going to play him? Blah, 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 and this stuff. Because in the meantime, he gets accused of rape.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It's an awful situation. Belichick says we're going to play him. And he does. He gets a touchdown today as New England wipes out whoever they played. They won 43-0, and he got a touchdown.
Yeah.
The issue, Russ, is yes, okay, innocent until proven guilty.
You just answered your question. You're going to throw at me, but keep going.
It's a pretty ugly charge, Russ.
Yeah, it is. But innocent until proven guilty. I mean, we've all known people who've been accused of something they didn't do. And I sure hope that this girl is telling the truth. And we just won't know until it's proven either correct or false. So you can't, okay, I accuse you of something. Okay, you can't play because you've been accused. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, you can't do that in life. You got to prove that this happened. And if it happened, then he deserves to get whatever that will come with the crime. But until it's proven, the guy should play football.
Okay. Yeah. And then, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, what if he is guilty of this, Russ?
Well, he's going to get hammered. I mean, he'll be suspended. He potentially might go to jail. I mean, I don't know. Is it a civil? Or is she going civilly or criminal? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, if she proves that he did all this, then he's in a lot of pain for a good reason. And there was that. Remember that player that physically. He hit his wife or fiance, and they
on video.
And his career is over, right? I mean, I don't think he's ever played since, and they're still together. And but you know, everybody, it doesn't matter if you're a football player or not, you got to act accordingly.
Listen, Russ, I'm of that opinion. I agree with you. I agree with you because if we started suspending players for accusations against them, you might not be able to field a guy.
Yeah, I know.
You know, shit that's happening. You know, a guy got a drunk driving. Yeah. A guy got, you know, stole money, or I don't know, whatever. You know, it was a deadbeat dad and didn't pay alimony and all that shit. So I agree with you. Speaking of deadbeats,
Russ,
another story. The Sens are in complete turmoil.
Oh,
the Ottawa Senators, and the owner has been going kooky the last couple of years. Eugene Melnyk talking about, getting rid of the team. He hates the fans. The fans hate him. Yeah. But it's pure entertainment.
Yeah. You know,
that this guy, the shit he said. Prior to that, Eugene Melnyk made a public appeal to get a liver transplant.
Right.
You know, and sort of threw it out there to the fans, almost suggesting that if you give me your liver, you know, I'm going to shoot you some season tickets.
Oh my God.
Or, I don't know if you remember that story.
I remember him being sick. I do remember reading that he was in need. I didn't know he did all that.
So what happens here, Russ, is a casino now in the last few days has filed a lawsuit against Eugene Melnyk. It was a casino up in the northeast part of the states, and he wrote four or five checks to cover his $900,000 tab.
Ooh, losses.
And none of them cleared. They all bounced.
Oh, boy.
These checks. So there's a couple of, you know, if I'm a player on the team, Russ, I'm like, hey, I want my dough up front.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
I want my cash.
Well, if he's in trouble, the legal cover all the players' salaries and everything. And then eventually they take it over. So he'll just like, you know, a house, if you can't make the payments, eventually the bank takes it back. So players will be fine.
The players will be fine. Yeah, they get covered. But I mean, what's sort of crazy about this story is, you know, he was an alleged billionaire, right? Everyone thought he was.
Yeah.
So he receives this liver transplant and now he's sitting in a smoke-filled casino.
Yeah.
Okay. Gambling thousands of bucks. And God, I hope he wasn't drinking.
How do you think he got the bad liver in the first place?
I guess, yeah. Yeah, like old man used to say to me, he says, yeah, I'll tell you something about my son, how much he drinks. He gets up in the morning, he's got to kickstart his liver.
Right.
Anyway, I don't know how this thing will play out, but would the leaks step in here at this point, Russ?
Yeah,
is this a private matter, or would
they're probably already in there? I mean, you know, they've done this before with a lot, probably more teams than we all know about, and then they just take over ownership and they control the team, and then they personally start looking for a buyer. So there's all kinds of people out there who want to buy a team. I have a friend in Boston that tried to buy a couple teams, and if the league knew about him, then they'd be calling him right now and go, you know, there's a good chance that Ottawa Senators might come available, you know, and here's how much it's going to cost. So if you're interested, please let us know, because if you're not, we have other people, and they just start going down the line. And they all, you know, that's how they get rid of these teams that are struggling. They usually go out and get active because they know who's not making the payroll.
Well, if I'm Eugene Melnick, okay, and I got some issues.
Yeah.
All right. I'm a bit of a goofball. Maybe I got a gambling issue. That's, you know, only he knows, I guess. But being a million in debt might be inviting.
No. You misspoke there.
What's that?
Everybody knows he's got a gambling problem now.
I mean,
that secret's out.
Yeah.
900K and he bounced five checks. I think he's got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm him though, I just gotta find a friend.
Yeah.
And say, look, I need a million large.
Yeah. How many darts have you had tonight?
Fuck, I don't know. I'm smoking a lot of cigarettes, man. Yeah. That's like, you know what, Russ? That's like our starting point when whenever you say to me, okay, I'm ready. How many smokes have you had? I don't know, about seven or eight an hour, Russ. Drinks with you.
Yeah, you're on the marathon.
I'm on the marathon, baby. We're back at it. This show will be sort of wonky. We got cut off in the middle. You had to go close some deals. That was hilarious. I could hear you on the phone.
Yeah.
And then you went for dinner. And so we're back doing the sort of second half of the show, I guess, today.
Yeah. But,
what I was telling you before we broke down, you know, we're talking about Melnick and the Senators and all that jazz and what a fiasco this thing is. And he bounced a bunch of checks for 900 grand. And
yeah,
you had explained a pretty good thing. The league might cover it and all this jazz. But, you know, the CFL, which is very close to Canadians' hearts, okay? But,
yeah.
And we love to think of it as a great league. I'm always of the opinion.
It is a great league.
It's a fantastic league, but I'm always of the opinion they should change it, get it to four downs. You'll get more Americans coming up here, blah, blah, blah. And but anyway, to give you an idea how that thing sometimes operates on a shoestring budget, my boss, when I worked for, it was called Chum. You probably remember Chum out in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And the Waters family owned Chum. And we had the rights to CFL, Ottawa Rough Riders. Our radio station did the broadcast rights. And the guy who owned it at the time was going broke. And it quickly came around that chances are he's not going to be able to make payroll. So he called my boss at the radio station and said, can you give me next year's advance on the radio rights for the,
oh boy,
for the team. And sure enough, the game started that afternoon and the guy had to, you know, pay everyone that night. And he came into the stands where my boss was there and handed him an envelope for 100 grand he needed from the and off he went and saved the team for another day. And then he sold the team and we got stiffed. The radio station got stiffed on the 100.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
No way.
Sort of a crazy, funny thing, but
100 grand for a CFL team. Can you imagine?
Well, to get the payroll.
Oh,
right.
Oh,
to meet the payroll.
I gotcha.
But even that, right. Yeah. That's all it is. And, what's the biggest check, Russ? I remember talking to Mess, when he signed a big contract way back in the day. And I remember he flashed his check to me, you know, and I forget what it was, like 250 grand or something, because you get paid over 6 months. So it was like he had over $1 million contract. And I remember him just going, I've never seen this much money on one paycheck.
Yeah, no shit.
You must have seen some big checks in your day.
Yeah. The worst check was when I played in Vancouver.
Or worst.
The worst. Yeah. This is the worst. So I made $1,485,000 or something like that. So call it $1,500,000.
Biggest year, Russ? Is that the most you made at any one time?
Yeah. Okay. So I made $1,500,000 in Vancouver, and Gino Ogic made exactly half of what I made. And we'd get our paychecks every 2 weeks we got 14 checks in a season, right? So every 2 weeks that frickin' lovely Gino Ogic would come up to me and go, can I see your check? Because he made half what I made. And our checks were identical because he lived on a reservation. He didn't pay taxes.
No taxes.
I think our checks were like 52 or 57,000. I can't remember, but every 2 weeks we got a check for like 57 grand. And Gino would, hey, Quartz, come over here. Hey, Quartz, come here. I want to see your check. Yeah. So, anyways,
well, it's true to this day.
Yeah. So, and a funny story to that is that
when Gino wasn't playing that great, my brother and I would go up to him. Jeff played with him for a long time. I only played with him for a couple of years. And he said, how you get Gino going is you just say, hey, Gino, I heard a rumor that you're going to get traded. And if he got traded and there wasn't a reservation in, that he could live on where he played, he got taxed. Uh-oh. So he would lose all that money, right? So Jeff would go, hey, Gino, I think there's a rumor you're getting traded to Philadelphia. That night he'd get in three fights. He didn't want to lose his job. He didn't want to move to – he didn't want to get traded. It was freaking hilarious. He's like, okay. I got to settle that.
It's like Koff always said, you know, he played for a lot of teams and they couldn't they couldn't settle his deal or something like that. And the team said to him, Koff never been to the minors.
Oh, of course, my God.
Coffee.
Either the team said,
yeah, is that right? Okay, you've never been there either.
Not Koff, one game.
Koff tells this great story. He said, the manager said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to send you to the minors, you know, and you can, you know, and because I don't want you here, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Koff said, you know, I thought I had no problem with that. You know, I said, who cares? I'm getting the same kind of dough. Until he woke up in the morning, he was standing in the mirror going, I can't go to the minors.
Yeah.
I can't go to the minors. Can't go to the minors. I can't go to the minors.
Yeah. Well, they used to threaten guys with like Alexander McGillney in New Jersey is making $5.5 million a year. And they, Lou Lamoriello said, you're going to the minors, thinking that he quit. And Alex goes, okay, just let me know where I'm going. And he went, and it didn't work. Cause a lot of guys, Doug Bodger, Brian Burke, threatened to send him to the minors, and he ended up buying him out because he was like, nah, I'm at the end of my career. You know, I'm done. So they worked out a deal. So it worked with some players, but when McGillney was told, he goes, I don't care. I'm going down. Just send me my check.
Which really probably is a great attitude, right?
Yeah.
You don't let ego. You know.
I would have a great attitude for $5.5 million.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And then I got to ride the bus. Okay.
Yeah. No problem.
How about I buy a bus and we a better bus?
Sure. There you go. Yeah. I'll do that. I got lots. One of the holdouts is Patrick Laine from Winnipeg, who's not hasn't made a deal yet, and
needs a haircut.
Needs a haircut. He's going to go practice in Switzerland or something. Or I don't know, somewhere over there. And you know, I said I got to ask Russ this, you know, because you're hearing more and more of this, the KHL, the European League over there. But is it really, Russ? Should the NHL be nervous about losing guys to that league, or is it still, in my mind, it's still a minor league and there's no league like the NHL?
They do not have to worry about it at all. I mean, the players that play there, it's great and they get paid a lot of money and all that stuff. But every athlete that plays hockey wants to be in the best league, and that's the NHL. And they, and North America, I mean, two better countries than Canada than the United States. I mean, give me a break. And the travel's not as bad over there. Who's telling me they played over there and they had like a, they flew like 10 hours. They land and then they're like, oh yeah, and we got another 6 hours to get to where we're going.
Jesus.
So I don't see it as a problem. I think eventually there might be some competition between maybe some of the leagues, but I don't see it as a problem. I think it's great for the European players because they have an option. If they're not good enough for the NHL or they can't sign a contract, they can play over there. But the NHL's in a great state. There's so many players now. I mean, there's too many good players, and the NHL's in good standing.
You know, with all these big signings, Rusty, you know, on one way, it kind of bugs me because these weeks leading up to the opening of the season, you know, we're in September now, the middle of September, and all you're hearing about is these huge signings. You know, Marner, we talked about earlier in the show, where he signed for $10 million and off he goes with a 6-year deal or something. But there's so many guys, Russ, who you know, who make far less, who played in the NHL. You know, when you think back to your day, some of these guys must wake up each year and go, geez, I don't know if I'll be able to make it this year. You know, I don't mean money wise, you know, that I hope this whole career can last. And unfortunately for a lot of those guys, a defining moment is when they get sent down to the minors, you know, yeah. and these poor pricks got to look at their life. And I mean, that must be an awful situation for guys, Russ, when the team says, no, we're going to move you down. When you think of your career, Russ, was there one defining moment? I know you, a couple shows ago, it was really good when you talked about how lonely you kind of felt in the first, or you were alone in the first 3 or 4 years because you didn't have a father figure. Was there one instant or one moment, Russ, or one defining time where you said, okay, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be all right in this league, where there was a turning point for you?
I used to tell players, young players, that you got to play any defenseman. I said to Brett Hedekin, if you play 3-4 years in a row in the NHL, you're a 10-year veteran, no problem. And I told John LeClaire this in Montreal. I go, John, quit focusing on 40 and 50 goals. Focus on 20. If you score 20 goals, you're going to be a 10-year veteran. Don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not trying to take away anything from their goals as a player, but as a job, as a career, to make it and feel like you've arrived and you can stay. Those were kind of my my goals for them. And John LeClaire said to me later, when he went on to score 40 and 50 goals in Philadelphia, he goes, you know, Russ, thank you so much because you took so much pressure off me, because when you made me just focus on 20 instead of 30 or 40 or 50, mm-hmm. I just lowered my standard of, okay, this is what I need to do, but I still want to do that. And he eventually, that happened. And with Brett Hedekin, he was so nervous in training camp. I'm like, Brett, just relax. You're 3-4 years now. You're good. Like, just mm-hmm. quit being so nervous. So for me, when I had a huge night that I had a blowout night against Detroit, and I got a bunch of points in a game, and I went, you know what? I'm good. I can play in this league. I didn't know how long I was going to play. And anyone who asked me, when I was 21, 22, 23, 24, I said, I think I can play 6 more years. And I just kept saying that. And then as I got older, obviously the 6, you know, was like 4, maybe 3 more, then 2. And even though you think you can still play, I was 33, just turned 34. That was my last season. Mm-hmm. And I was working out, getting ready, and it didn't happen for me. And I was done. And Cam Neely said it best. He goes, 99.5% of all hockey players don't retire. They get retired. You don't get to retire unless you're Wayne Gretzky or, you know, so-and-so. He goes, just be ready for it. And right. it happened to me. But once I had that big night against Detroit and Toronto, mm-hmm. that was it. I knew I was, you know, I knew I could play in the league, and I was going to play a long time.
When you say you knew you were done, Russ, take us in there specifically. What happened? Was it the team that came to you and said, you're not fitting in anymore? Or was it some rude awakening that you put on yourself that said,
well, I was a free agent. So I played out my 97, 98 season in LA. And I was a free agent, and, 98, 99 was my last season. And then, so I was a free agent in 1999. I got a couple offers, mm-hmm. but they were really low. And I'm like, by the time you rent a house, put your kids right. in school, I'm like, I'm losing money. So, I was like burnt out, man, I was living in LA and the weather was nice. I was getting into golf. I'm like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't do this anymore. And my oldest daughter just started kindergarten, and I'd had a long career, 16 years. And I just said, you know, I'm not going to go there and play for less than what I was making. And so that was kind of it. And then it dries up and then new players come in. And that's what happens is like when you pause, there's like thousands of guys wanting your spot. So teams don't have to beg. When you're older, I mean, if you still got a lot of game left and you might have a bargaining chip, but you know what? When you get older and you don't have as much as you had before, it's like, okay, we'll go with the 22-year-old kid that's freaking starving and wants to do whatever it takes and sure. Not the 34-year-old that, he wants to stay home with his family. And I was quite happy to pack it in when I did.
I've always known you to call a spade, and what I always admired about you, looking back at your hockey career, is you always sort of had something in your back pocket away from hockey. I know you and your brother were pretty active business wise. You seemed to connect yourself with other people, and seemingly that's a brilliant idea for an athlete, particularly in hockey, because their careers are so short. Did you sort of set it up that way, Russ, or just over the years that you were in LA, you made so many connections that it just sort of fell in your lap, or what was your outlook after you said, okay, I'm not going to play? What were you going to do?
Well, I tell my friends that I do retirement better than anybody. I love, right. You know, everyone's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I started making up shit because I wasn't doing anything. And I'm like, well, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I'm not a person that is driven by work. I'm driven by life and life experiences. And so I got into real estate through Harold Ballard's daughter when I was 19. And so I kind of dabbled in that a little bit, but not really in a business sense, but my wife and I, we'd build a house and after 2 or 4 years, we'd sell it. And then we'd do another one. And so I loved that. Mm-hmm. But my brother, Jeff, he's like panicking every morning because he needs to do something, you know, he needs work and create. And I'm just not that person. I like making money like anybody else, but you know, it's not everything to me. I just love living and love people. And, you know, I'm as social as anyone, you know. And so I don't know, like when I retired, I deferred money with Montreal, Paris, and I went up to Victoria. We built a house. We sold it. We came back to LA. We built another house. We sold it to Britney Spears. We did another house. I'm now working for Discovery. I don't know. I have a good life, but I'm not the wealthiest person in the world, but I'm wealthier than most because of the people that I know and that I relate to. And, my wife is always fascinated by how many contacts I have on my phone.
I am too. And I got a lot.
When I went from BlackBerry to Apple, the phone, we went into the Verizon store and so they're downloading my phone and they're like, right? It's like, the guy comes back and he's going, oh my God, it's taking forever. And the guy goes, do you know how many contacts you have? And I go, I don't. I don't even know how you can tell. And he goes, you have over 3,000 people in your phone.
Come on.
Yeah. So I have, I don't know how many I have now, but Jesus. That was a few years ago. So
I don't, go ahead.
I know. So I throw these parties at my house, especially in Victoria. Mm-hmm. And my brother would walk in and he goes, who the fuck are all these people? And I go, they're my friends. And he goes, they can't be all your friends. I go, yeah, they're all my friends. I go, Jeff, I hang out with that asshole once, but not twice. So
that's good.
I love people. I'm open to that. So to answer your question, I have a lot of friends. I've done a lot of things, you know, my charity stuff with the Courtney Celebrity Classic and all that. But business-wise, it's really helped me because I hear people, I listen to people, I frickin', and then when I do something, I just go through my phone and I'm like, okay, I can contact this person, that person. And it's worked for me. And, you know, I'm 54 years old and I'm managing. So,
right.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm the recipient of being in that contact list because, you know, the stuff. So I was going to ask you, you know, were you ever nervous about what the hell am I going to do when I give up hockey? But you've answered that. And like I say, I'm on the, and I will always appreciate it. I was on the positive end of that when you went into the podcast world, you know?
So, well, just think if we get a few more listeners, you and I could maybe buy out Melnick in Ottawa and go buy the Senators.
And make payroll for them. Yeah. Maybe pay out. Yeah. Yeah. We're making lots now, Eugene. We're going to cover your mill. By the way, Russ, thanks to all the listeners. We're up another 5,000 or something. We're at 60,000 listeners.
No way. We're at 60.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're at 60. I was at dinner tonight. So we lost connection. And then yes. I had to go for dinner. I came back. We're doing the show. And I'm telling these friends, Harry and Bridget Felber from Denver, live in Phoenix. I'm having dinner with them. And they're like, we didn't know you had a podcast. And I go, I didn't want to tell anybody in case it failed.
you and me both. I know. I'm like,
they're like, promote the show, and I'm like, not a fucking chance. I'm not promoting the show. I can't believe it because I remember when Bill Yiddy said, you know, you got to get to 10,000,
right?
And that's where right. 10,000. I'm like, who the frick is going to listen to the show? So now we're at 60. It's a big moment for us.
It is a big moment. And I remember you and I texting back and forth because we knew that number, right? It was like, okay, if you get 10,000 followers, okay, there's $400 to split up 70 ways. Okay. And we're like, okay, well, we'll give it a whirl, you know. We'll give it a try. And it's off and running, and it's beyond our expectation. But thanks to you, you know, and I'll tell you why, Russ, just because the last 5 minutes, what you did is so candid, you know, to bring people inside your thinking and your life. And one of the other things I want to ask you is, because I know you lived in LA, and you still live there when you're not in Idaho, and Eddie Money died, you know, from Two Tickets to Paradise, you know, that guy, Baby, Hold On to Me, he died. We've lost a lot of guys and music, you know, David Bowie and Prince and all these guys over there. Tom Petty has died. And I know hockey. I thought I got to ask Russ because, you know, we talked earlier in the show about it's a real honor to be named captain, however you can figure it out, as you said. Yeah. It was a 90-way tie for 3 hours trying to pick Joe. But isn't there something, Russ, about who gets to play the music in the locker room and what the skate-on music is and stuff?
Yeah.
Huh?
That's a whole, oh my God, over the years, you know, I didn't like country Western and now I freaking love country. But I remember I got traded to Minnesota and then we ended up in Dallas and we had a bunch of farm boys on our team and they loved their country. And I'm like, turn that shit off. Fuck. You know, you're like, fuck. And then I go to LA and it's acid rock. You've got Rob Blake and who else was there? There was like four or five young guys and now I'm an old guy, right? I'm 32, 33, 34, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And they're playing heavy metal, like headbanger music. I'm like, who the fuck is, who are these guys? And then in Toronto, we had Al Secord who used to play these MTV, you know, music videos and stuff. And it's interesting that the music, how it changes over the era. And you know, you got the young athlete in the NHL is 18 to 24.
For sure.
Middle age is 24 to 28. And then the old guys are 28 and above. So you can imagine the change of music, you know, when the young guys come in, they want this, the middle age guys want that. And then the older guys are, it's funny. I remember we in Montreal, Shane Corson and Mike Keane, I think, brought in a Dice Clay, cassette. And Ryan Walter, who was a born again Christian, he just shook his head and he walked out of the locker room and he went into the medical room and he said, "Tell the coach I can't put on my equipment until those guys stop playing that rude, crude stuff." Cause he was talking, you know, comedian talking about all this stuff. He goes, "I just can't be in the room." So that wasn't music, but it was a funny moment, you know, where guys had just had enough and I'm not going to listen to it anymore.
Sure. Well, the whole music thing, I think, started with the Globetrotters. They played like Sweet Georgia Brown, you know, when they came on the court. And now the music, like now it's Eminem, man.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I mean, it is hip-hop and gangsta, you know, a bunch of the music that they're playing. But
we played in Toronto, we played Creedence Clearwater Revival, and the fans complained that it was rude and crude.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah. CCNR. You can't play that during warm up. Because they used to, back then, they had the organs.
That's right. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Now the guys, now the guys laying down some 50 cents, you know, between breaks. Russ, before we go, when the season starts up, this sort of got me onto this story about equipment in hockey and the leagues coming up. A guy got nailed yesterday in baseball and fractured his face, took the ball in the face. And I said, you know, at what point, I watched the highlights of a women's college fastball game, and the pitchers are wearing protection on their face now. They got a mask that comes across their mouth, so it protects their teeth and their eyes. And it's just like, softball's a little different, so you don't have to have a bunch of bars on your mask, right? Just a couple. And I know, every year they keep thinking Don Cherry's not going to make it back, you know, and he's back again. He's been on the air for 1,000 years. And he always had the take that the equipment, ironically, is too big when it comes to protecting players because they got to slow down when they give a guy cement-packed elbow pads and shoulder pads. Guys are going to get hurt. And I read a little piece today that a guy's put on, I think it's Kachuk in Calgary or wherever, he's put on 22 pounds of muscle over the off season. And the game's different now, Russ, where guys are getting hurt a lot more than they used to. And you've talked to some old guys that you would have just played with at the beginning of your career who said, well, they don't respect each other, you know? And we never planted a guy into the boards when he had his back to us and shit like that, even if it was a penalty. What are your thoughts on that, Russ, coming into the year again? And, you know, the everything is so big and guys are so big. And is it a league now, Russ, where hurt a guy and you're going to stay on the team?
I think Don Cherry has a lot of good points because the equipment is so, it's like metal. It's like, it's light, but it's, you know, it's armor. And I think that NHL has done a good job over the last few years about getting rid of the headshots. But before that, prior to that, guys were throwing elbows, knocking guys out and all that. And then now they've penalized people to the point where they hopefully will stop doing it. All athletes look at every sport: bigger, stronger, faster. Mm-hmm. The equipment's better. Golfers are hitting it further than they've ever hit. Tiger Woods was talking about hitting a 3-wood now further than his drives 10 years ago. And he's an older player. Mm-hmm. I just think you got to really, you have to really pay attention to the rules and penalizing people who intentionally hurt people. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, hopefully you can contain the injuries and the roughness of the game. Keep it strong, keep it physical. And I think everybody shoulder to shoulder, everybody can handle that. It's just when the elbows and the knees and the sticks and all that stuff comes into play. And it's usually a head area that is the dangerous part. Most players are protected. And, you know, the guy who has the he's 250 pounds or 230 pounds of muscle, the kid who's 200 pounds of muscle and they got the same equipment, as long as they shoulder to shoulder hit, they're fine. It's when that guy raises his elbow and hits him in the head, there's an issue. So
I think a career-ending one.
Yeah. And Don Cherry's right. I mean, if they took away some of the equipment, and I think they are, like, you can see the players, like, they look like they're not wearing a lot, both football and hockey, because it's so good. The equipment's so good now.
Right.
And it's less physical. I mean, there's more flags in there's more flags in fucking football than the UN. Oh my God. It's awful. It's like every play. You just look to the right-hand corner of the TV screen, waiting for the yellow flag. It's a joke.
Yeah, it is. But at least they call it. You know, they don't care if it's the last second of the Super Bowl. If there's a penalty, at least they call it.
Yeah.
Hockey hasn't quite there yet. Hey, what if everyone wore what should one day, Russ, what do you think of mandatory cages in the NHL?
Nah, fuck the cage.
No, you don't want it?
No, I like the mask, the protecting the eyes. But you know what? Hockey players got to lose some teeth. If you don't lose some teeth, you're not a hockey player. You got to lose two in your career.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't lose two, you haven't had a career.
I love that. I love that. And before we go, what's your opinion? Because I hate it. I hate the size.
Hey, we don't use hate on this program.
Okay.
I do not like.
Okay, I won't say I loathe.
Hate is a bad word.
Oh, hate, just settle down. You've had a couple drinks. You'll be okay after
this. A couple.
You've told me you hate me. What about the size of the goalie pads, Russ? Why when are they going to stop, man? Like everything, I hate how big their shit is.
Hey, use the word hate again.
Oh, sorry. Okay, fine. Are you falling asleep right now?
No.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it on another show then. We'll wait.
The goalie pads are too big. And there again, the players are getting bigger, stronger, faster. The goalie pads, I was thinking about this today. It's funny you mention it. The goalie pads are so light. I watched this guy on Instagram. I don't know what team he was on. He was skating around like he had no pads on. He's firing pucks out in the top corner. It was a goalie in training camp. I'm like, when I played, those guys moved at they couldn't move. And this guy's flying around the ice like he's got shin pads on, but he's got goalie pads on. He's ripping it off the freaking top bar. Yeah. And it's because the equipment is so light, but it's so big. And so I think they got to shrink them as much as they can. The goalies have such an advantage because they're 6'5", like quarterbacks in the NFL now. They're not 5'7", like Alan Bester when he played in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they cover so much of the net, and they're agile. They're great athletes. They always have been. But now with these feather light pads, it's unreal how good they are, but they somehow, some way, they got to maybe shrink the pads and make it easier for guys to score, because ultimately that's what the fans want to see. They want to see physical contact. They want to see the beauty of the game, the skating and the passing, and then they want to see goals. I mean, who wants to go to a freaking 1-0 game?
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, nobody does. You want to see like a 4-2, 5-3, 6-4, 7-5. You know, the 80s were great. You watched it in Edmonton when you had the pom-poms and you were cheering for Wes and Gretz. And I think you were right there. You were their valet, their car wash, their whatever guy. And they were winning 9-7 and 8-2 and whatever. It was fun, right? Let's keep fans engaged.
Totally fun. Yeah. You talk about guys who are overweight, you know, or pretty. I remember Marty, you know, I'm funny, Marty McSorley is, and Eddie was at one of those fantasy camp, a little beefy, you know, he was a little heavy and trying to move with the goalie. And Marty said, if you want to get away from Eddie, just turn and skate very slowly the other way. Rusty, this was great, baby. Another episode of The Suspendables is in the books. And enjoying every minute of it. And let's sing a song, Russ, before we go. Come on,
you're feeling it tonight. I don't sing.
Come on. One song. Try and sing something.
I do not sing. Don't put me on the spot.
Can you dance? Can you do anything?
Oh, I can dance.
All right, baby. Next time we're going to... Maybe I'll take a video of you dancing. We'll put it up on the podcast. Rusty, get back to what you're doing. That's Russ Courtnell, 17, 18, 19-year NHL veteran.
No, 16, you idiot.
It's a charity. You talked about charity. I'm giving you some charity.
Fuck you.
We're back each and every week for another episode.
Dumb and Dumber.
Repeat. Take care, everybody. We'll talk to you, Rusty. Okay. Go have a cocktail.
All right. Till next week.